She politely told us to shut up.
Good morning. And thank you for joining me on this week's episode of Face to Face Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and our co-host, Paul Faust, is blowing up everywhere. Businesses picking up, and he is traveling today. Usually he joins us in the airport. Today he was actually in the air, so we couldn't grab Paul, but I know he's here with us, thinking of us in spirit. So I'll go ahead and introduce my guest. Some of you have seen week after week, some are new, but I know we'll have an interesting conversation. I want to go ahead and introduce our first guest, Mr. Ari Baum. You've seen him on the show a couple of times. Love him. He brings such great insight to the show. Good morning, Ari. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing awesome. How are you doing today?
I am wonderful. Tell us a little bit briefly about yourself, Ari, because the information that you provide, I read your emails every week. And what happens is I see the world and then I get an email and I'm like, okay, Ari's going to explain the world. So tell us about yourself, Ari.
Okay. So I'm a certified financial planner and CEO of Endurance Wealth Partners. We're a wealth management firm based out of New York City. And we do four things for our clients: financial planning, wealth management, insurance, and lending. Lately, I've been getting a lot of questions about GameStop and how people are going to make billions of dollars, you know, becoming a Reddit trader. So if that's something of interest, we could certainly talk about that today.
Is that going on in America?
That is going on in America.
We're going to talk about that today because I love to find out what is going on in the world. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, and this beautiful young lady. You see her here almost every week on Face to Face Talk Show, even though this is her first appearance of the new year, Miss Lanika Shelley. Good morning, Lanika. How are you? Welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me back. Hi, everyone. I just wanted to say hi. Happy to be here again, and I'm ready to have a good show.
What are you passionate about?
I am passionate about putting good into the world. I am passionate about proving that I can change the world, because it's true. When people say you can't change the world, I believe that that is a false statement. So I help people see that that is false, and everybody's supposed to play their part.
That's right. Change starts with a conversation. And that's one of the things that we do here on Face to Face Talk Show. I want to go ahead and introduce another one of our regulars, Mr. Salim Amir Bey. He is here. He loves to talk about food and the Constitution. Good morning, Salim. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. You just nice and mellow this morning.
Well, I've started a new job. I'm back in my element, cooking. I get to cook for so many different people, and some of the dishes that we give them are very, very just delightful for the situations that we're in. I work in a nursing home, and like last week we got to sear duck for them, and we had gnocchi yesterday. We have pork loins. We have things like that, and it's just amazing to be able to give back and be in my my natural comfort zone.
Wow, the nursing home. What do I have to do to get in this nursing home so I can give me a plate?
We had to talk about that. I mean, I can get you as a guest. I can do that, you know, because you're going to be senator one day. So I want to go ahead and privy them up for that now. But you can always go and visit any nursing home. And if they're, you can have guests and everything there, because that's the one sad thing. They don't have a lot of visitors. A lot of people, even before COVID, they never had a lot of visitors. So it's a great way to like talk to people, get those nice stories, get that knowledge that they just dropping all over everywhere. It's pretty good. But if you come to mind, you're getting the best food in the United States. So,
man, I guess I gotta head to Seattle.
Yes.
I'm going to come back to you, Salim. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And this young man is what they call a troublemaker. He likes to cause trouble on all of my shows, but he's an amazing guy, Mr. Robert Foster. How are you, Robert?
Why do I got to be a troublemaker?
Because you're a troublemaker. I don't know why you have to be a troublemaker, but you are a troublemaker.
Listen, when people speak, if there's holes in their story, I address the holes in the story. All right, I'm a fact seeker.
Yes, you like to have a very interesting conversation and look at both sides. But tell us what you're passionate about, Robert.
helping people get out of their own way.
Nice.
That's what it is.
Nice.
So many people in a box, and I help them slowly open up the box, and then we burn the box.
No, maybe it's just me. Maybe it's how I interpreted it. But you just made it sound so sweet and so pretty. Just open up the box and then, but shut up and grind.
Well, you know, it might be a little more direct, but as an accountability coach, you know, it's not my job to give hugs. It's my job to get you what you want to where you are on that bridge. So it's my job to get you over that bridge, whatever it takes.
Well, I love it. For me to keep motivated, I have to, I need that accountability coach. I need someone to push me and to keep me going. I'm going to come back to you, Robert. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Mark Stern. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. Thank you so much for having me on today. This is great. And I'm really glad that I was one of your later introductions, because I'm really feeling a common theme about change, and I love that. And my company is all about communication and changing the world, because we live in a loneliness epidemic, and that's what we're all about, communicating.
A loneliness epidemic. What would you say? I know I'm stating the obvious, but I also have learned that people have their own definitions for certain things. So what is a loneliness epidemic for you?
Well, we live in a society that uses the internet not for what it should actually be used for, which is a communication tool. We basically use it to argue with strangers and look at pictures of cats, right? Nothing against cats, I like cats. But the real reason that people are struggling, aside from COVID, and they were struggling pre-COVID and they're going to struggle post-COVID, is because there is such a lack of human interaction. And my company, Need to Be Heard, is all about facilitating an environment where people can talk, they can be heard, they can find the empathy, the love, and the communication that they're lacking, and talk to someone who is a professional listener, who fully understands where you're coming from and gives you a forum that is not always easily attained.
Mark, I think that's wonderful. I think that's powerful, but I think people like me might abuse the whole idea. You know, I just like to talk. I love to hear myself talk. And if you give me an environment where someone is there just to listen, I might talk to them all day.
What? No, I'm kidding. Abuse away.
What made you decide to make it into a business?
Well, my mom is in an assisted living facility and has COVID, and she's currently in the hospital. And there was so much. When I went to visit her, so many people were obviously hungry for a connection. And my partner, Tara, who is also my partner in Need to Be Heard, she has a business where she goes to seniors' homes and teaches them technology. And one of her statements to me when we first discussed making this organization was that most of the time when she spends an hour with someone, it's 50 minutes of discussion, because people feel lonely. They want to be able to talk. Sometimes just the mere act of discussing something helps you solve a problem. And it's not always for a therapist or for a clergy member or for a friend. Sometimes you just want to talk in a private and confidential way, and you never know you're going to answer your own questions. It's actually rather remarkable.
But I like that, though. I mean, all joking aside, you need somewhere to talk to. I remember one time at my lowest point, I didn't know what I was going to do. I called the suicide hotline. I told the lady, I said, I need somebody to talk to. She was like, this is the suicide hotline. I said, I know, I need somebody to talk to. She was like, but we don't just talk to people. This is the suicide hotline. I said, look, lady, I need somebody to talk to. And then she was like, well, what would you like to talk about? And then we talked for like hours, you know? So I don't know what would have happened if she wasn't there to listen to all my troubles all that time. But Mark, I am going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce this lovely young lady, Miss Janice Birch. Good morning, Janice. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Tell us, what are you passionate about?
Ooh, I'm passionate about helping leaders. So I am a conscious leadership coach, and I'm the founder of two businesses, Work Soul Flow and Before Diversity. And conscious leadership is just all about like helping leaders lead from a state of like higher awareness and higher responsiveness so that they're more effective.
What made you decide to turn into a business?
So I actually started my business during the start of the pandemic, actually, speaking of COVID and speaking of being a professional listener. I love, Mark, that that's the description that you use, because that's definitely like how I would describe myself as well. I feel like as leaders, sometimes you're so autonomous and you're so like in this space where you don't really get the feedback that you need to improve. Meanwhile, you're dealing with these like advanced problems and challenges that you're not really sure how to solve. And just having someone trained to help you have a productive conversation versus that like spiral, you know, negative conversation that doesn't really get you anywhere. I kind of help guide a conversation that helps you get self-insight and lead you towards like your goals and actually accomplishing them.
I love that. Yes, we need more people like you. I'll come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, dear friend of mine, amazing man who is also a world changer, Mr. Richard Cardenas. Good morning, Richard. Great to have you back.
Good morning, Sharifa. Good morning, everybody.
Look at Richard. Richard then cleaned it up. Ooh.
I had to.
It's before everyone had the COVID beard and the COVID hair. And I guess we're coming back to what we used to be.
Yeah, we had to. So what am I passionate about? Mm-hmm. So I'm passionate about getting people to the next level. I'm passionate to being a servant leader. I own a financial brokerage firm, a Medicare firm, and you know we do and real estate projects. But I'm passionate about serving others. You know, giving back to others, it could be a high. You know, it could be that I'm going to do a financial analysis. I'm just passionate about getting people to the next level. And reminding them that they do have a voice and they are worthy and they are somebody. I'm very passionate about that. I'm also passionate about health and fitness. I think I ran 22 marathons in my life. And I think that that life taught me a lot about me. And it made me get very disciplined and start going into the triathlon world. But it taught me that I could be my own King Kong. And I think people need to be reminded that they are phenomenal. They just got to be reminded and be around the right people, the right associations, the right people that are going to help them, guide them there. You know, I like what Robert Foster, you know, shut up and grind, because that's the reality is you have a choice. You know, you have a choice to, you know, social media is big. You could Google stuff now. Like it's just a choice. So I'm just passionate about serving others, getting people to the next level, getting myself to the next level. Because we could try to get everybody to the next level, but you got to get yourself to the next level. You got to be one. You got to work on this guy. So that's 2021 is going to be just an offense season, offense year. I'm excited, clear. I'm just ready to rock and roll.
Let's rock and roll. Let's do it. Ari, talk to us. What's going on in the world?
There's a lot. What we saw this week, it was a big battle on Wall Street. It was, you know, the David versus Goliath. You know, you had a situation where, you know, most people are familiar with the company called GameStop. You know, they have retail stores and they sell video games. And, you know, unfortunately, with the pandemic, a lot of their stores had to close and people just weren't going in and the stock was getting hurt. And what happened was, a lot of the hedge funds were making investments for the stock to go down. So if the stock went down in price, the hedge funds made money. And what you saw happening that on these chat rooms, such as Reddit, people kind of started getting together and saying, hey, look, if we start buying this stock, these hedge funds are going to have to buy back their shares that they borrowed, and they're going to lose a lot of money, and we're going to make a lot of money. So not only can we line our pockets, but we could stick it to the man. so to speak. And it got a lot of attention this week. And the stock went from $4 up to like $400 in a matter of days. It is coming back down to reality now, and we could talk about that. But it's an interesting dynamic of what's going on, where you're seeing power going to the people. And it's not just big Wall Street backroom deals that are making things happen. So to some, it's leveling the playing field. Obviously, to others, it's very concerning. And it just makes for a very interesting debate on Facebook.
Is anyone else besides Ari following it?
I am. What really stuck out to me was Robinhood's role in this, Ari. So Robinhood, and I don't know much about stocks. I do not trade. I'll go ahead and say that. But from what I saw, their whole deal was, we're here for the little guy. We want to help you, like, you know, trade stocks and participate in this market. And when this happened, they basically stopped GameStop stocks from being traded. So they blocked these people who had decided to come together and stick it to the man from sticking it to the man, basically. It was like, no, the man stuck too hard. You can't do this. And so what really stuck out to me about that is their whole premise is, we're here for the little guy. We're here for you. We want to make this accessible, inclusive. But that they did the exact opposite once that's what actually started happening. And so I really think it's... I tweeted about this actually, because it kind of pissed me off. Like, you can't say that your values are rooted in one thing and then do the exact opposite. Like, other than that, like, your values are just who you think you want to be, not who you actually are. So like, your values actually get tested when you have to actually do the hard thing, not, you know, when it's easy and all of that stuff. So yeah, I feel like Robinhood's role in this is something that I don't really like. So what do you think, Ari? Are they gonna like continue to like be around for much longer?
I think supply and demand will tell us if people will continue going back to them. And I would say, fortunately, unfortunately, they will stick around. You know, I'll give you another example. Another free service that tends to do things that not everyone loves, but we stick with them anyway, is Facebook. You know, we don't pay to use Facebook, but they get all of our private and personal information. We might be upset about it, but there's no mass exodus from Facebook. I think the situation of Robinhood is actually interesting. First, I would say it's a beautiful marketing pitch. And they built a beautiful business model around being for the people and not charging commissions to make it more accessible to people. The challenge that they run into is, you're still a business at the end of the day. They do make money, you know, off of their clients, you know, or their customers. I can't really call them clients, but I'll call them customers. I think that there's a bigger dynamic with what they had to do, because they were trying to protect themselves versus protecting their customers.
Exactly.
And I think and I think the markets are gonna either reward them or punish them for these actions. You know, this is a good opportunity for another company. You know, let's say like a, I don't know, like, let's say there was another company, let's call it, you know, free trading, I don't, you know, making it up, or Fidelity or Vanguard, that always promoted themselves as being for the people. If I was them, capitalist, I would jump on this like white on rice. You know,
like coos on coos.
Well, I would like to say, first of all, as having a house full of teenagers, I already felt like I owned stock in GameStop already, just because how much I had spent. And I'm just mad that I missed the boat. I will just say that.
Yes. Yes. Stay away from the boat. It's what I would tell you.
Yes.
Stay far away from that boat.
That's what I really wanted to hear, you know, your take on it. That way I would know, because I don't have any knowledge in it.
So I'll give it to you in a simple format, right? The people on Reddit found a trading strategy that works, meaning GameStop had a valuation of $1 billion before the whole run-up, okay? The hedge funds were shorting $1 billion worth of the stock. So it kind of like canceled out the value of the company. So what the Reddit traders saw was an opportunity to squeeze these guys and force them to buy back $1 billion worth of stock. So there was more demand than the actual supply for Reddit. I'm not talking about Reddit, for GameStop. So that forced it to go up. It's a great strategy. We've seen this before. We saw this a few years ago with Bill Ackman and Carl Icahn. Bill Ackman came out and said Herbalife was a big Ponzi scheme and he was shambling the company. And then what happened was Carl Icahn, who didn't like Bill Ackman, said it's a good company and he started buying the stock. And he caused Herbalife to go up and Bill Ackman was losing and he had to cover his short. What was interesting is it was great drama on CNBC, but to you and me, most people didn't really hear about it because it was two titans fighting with each other. This hits more to home because this is regular folks like us that are now taking on the big institutions and winning. So we feel good. So that's a great story. But to come to your point, the danger is whoever's left or whoever's the last one to the party is going to get stuck with the check. The people on Reddit aren't going to tell you, you sell before I sell. Just like they bought and then they told everyone to sell. So you have to be very careful when you hear this, you know, these headlines and these blurbs about this stuff, because what happens is you hear about it now, you buy in, no one's going to tell you when to get out, and then the stock will tank. And what we've seen over the last 2 days, the stock has gone from 400 down to like 90 bucks. And that could hurt a lot if you put money into it. So better not to get involved in that game, is how I describe it.
Robert, you were going to say something?
No, we're just shifting.
No shifting in the middle of the conversation. So I hear you, Ari. A lot of people are talking about that. But one of the things that we're experiencing here in Southern California, when we talk about how people respond to things, and I wanted to have this conversation, is people want to have the first responders or the essential workers at grocery stores earn an additional $4 an hour because they're essential workers. And we had Kroger here just shut down Ralph's, and I think it was another grocery store, as opposed to paying these people. Did anyone see that article? Richard, did you see that here?
Oh, yes. I followed that.
You followed that, Celine?
Yeah, because it deals with food and it also still deals with the Constitution. The problem with that, so a lot of people look at grocery stores as like, they're not essential workers. They don't need this. So you got to understand that everybody in the public goes to a grocery store. Right. So it's different parameters, like when they set limits, different things like that. So they're always at risk to the public. Now, you got companies like Kroger who own QFC. They own Fred Meyers. They own a lot. Kroger is huge. Right. The problem with that is you see the same things with Walmart. They don't want to pay the essential people because of the amount of money that they're making. Food has gone up since COVID. Still, I mean, we all saw the paper shortages, whether it was toilet paper, whether it was paper towels, napkins, any type of sanitary items. We saw bleach go off the shelf. We saw cleaning items, Lysol, all these different things like that. And you can kind of see the propaganda in it. The problem is that these corporations need to follow the guidelines to pay what they call an essential worker, which is basically a critical care worker. So that's your anybody who deals with the public as part of their job. So when you get into a grocery store and you do that, you're talking about people that are making basically minimum wage. They're really not making a lot, right? And in Southern California, which is one of the most expensive places in the United States, I think it's still in the top 10, if I'm correct.
We take great pride in that.
Which I understand, but you know, on minimum wage, you can't afford anything in Orange County. You can't afford anything in Los Angeles County or the city of Los Angeles or any of the cities in that metropolitan. So that's a problem right there. And then when the federal is trying to say, hey, look, you need to give these people that, they'd rather close down and still get the kickbacks of closing down. Just because they closed down that store doesn't mean they stop making money. So but food is an industrial complex that most of us don't pay attention to because we need it to survive. So they can set the price to whatever you're going to have to eat something. So you'll eat the junk because you can't afford the organic. So it's a very big thing. And that's what I would
absolutely
need to see somebody take the Capitol Hill, because if you see what they're doing with food glues, I had to explain to somebody, I'm 6'5", 217 pounds, right? I don't have as much meat on my body as they have in the deli, right? So you got to think that, what are they actually feeding you? Turkey does not look like that. I've been around a lot. I've fabricated a lot of meats. They do not look like that. And we see groceries and these food companies allow people to get lies. Like, we hear the term processed. Oh, it's processed food. Processed food is bad. Well, you know, if you fabricate a chicken off the bone, that's processed chicken. So we're not giving them the correctness, or we're not giving them what the foods are actually doing to their bodies. And now we're taking it upon the workers, which are basically getting treated like, they're getting treated worse than migrant workers. Because migrant workers, you have like a union, you have something that you can do, whether it's internally or externally. Most of these people, they need that paycheck. They don't qualify for unemployment. They don't qualify for food stamps. They don't qualify for a lot of different things that the government is supposed to give when you don't have these jobs. But food care workers, man, I mean, we're everywhere. We have the best access to anything. I mean, the Pope would have to eat. If Jesus came down, he would have to eat. So everybody has to eat. But we're just looked at as the lowest on professionals, because we're not looked at as a profession, because everybody can do it. You can go in your kitchen and cook. So you don't look at a chef as you would look at a barber or an actor or something like that. But our laws are, that's just the tip of the surface, Sharifa. That's just the tip.
Let's talk to that. Mark started to say something. Go ahead, Mark.
Can we talk about the crux of everything that I'm hearing, which is, what is a living wage? Right, we need the essential workers, and if they're talking about raising the minimum wage, the companies can't afford to do that. So now it's a question of, you know, you're taking the people who are making minimum wage, who are essential workers, and they are called essential workers for a reason, but yet we're not paying them enough to survive. And so I'll just say, from my perspective, I am completely for raising the minimum wage to the $15 an hour proposal, although, you know, there are other ways that people can find a way in this world that allows them to make that money and maybe more. But that's completely, every family has its own dynamic. And I should mention at this point that my company, Need to Be Heard, is offering free sessions to essential healthcare workers during the COVID pandemic, because we just feel like there's so many people struggling, both food insecurity and emotional insecurity. So,
yes,
Is it Kroger's, or is it for the minimum wage in California? Because I know Biden mentioned for the entire country, but is the minimum wage increase across the board, or is it for companies that are of a certain size?
I believe it's across the board.
It's supposed to be across the board. So, like, mm-hmm. I work in a nursing home. So if they really wanted to say, we're part of those essential workers and different things like that, then our company would have to go about that, because it's a federal mandate. But the problem of it is that, you know, that's one of the things, and I'm not saying, Mark, that that's an excuse that people say, how the company is going to have to pay more. So things like that. Then think about our federal government. Congress people get a $40,000 stipend to get furniture. You know how much food that could help? You know, and when we're talking about,
yeah, and you can't eat a couch,
right? You know, and then we were talking about food deserts, which a lot of people don't know about. Grocery stores are cornerstone; they are center for that. So when those places shut down, it's not people like us that work. We can go anywhere. We have that. But you got to think about that mom or dad with single kids that has no transportation. You got to think about those people that are working or dealing with addicts or dealing with addiction or dealing with homeless problems. They're getting $200 a month in food stamps, and you got to spend it at 7-Eleven or a convenience store. So those things that Kroger are doing, it's basically a violation, because food is something that you have to have. If you don't
eat, it's a human violation.
Period. Right. So we could take it into the international with the human rights violations that they're doing as far as food. But you know, in the food industry, you would think that we would have some type of outlets. Well, you can't just be a farmer. You can't just buy seeds and throw it in the ground. You may falter to some regulation or something, you know, with companies like Monsanto and places like that. So what can a family do? That's the problem with us. That's the problem that's us that's in the inside. I'm a chef. I know how to cook anything. So that's not the problem. And I try to teach mine to anybody that can, taking different items that you have in your cabinets and trying to make something nutritious out of it, or something that's easily accessible. But when you're talking about health, when you're talking about price, when you're talking about quality of product, people really need to look into it. Our thing is worse than the prison industrial complex, because it's very, very stringent, and it's just looked over because you got advertisements of McDonald's and Burger King with their veggie burger and all these things like that. The stuff is not healthy at all. But
yes, that is one conversation. And I think the other point that Ari brought up was the aspect of the $15 minimum wage. And here in California, even if you earn $15, even if you earn $20 an hour, we throw in that little $4, you're still not going to be able to afford a place here. I mean, it used to be where you can get an apartment, especially in Long Beach, for $600, $700. Now you can get maybe a studio for about $1,200, but you're not going to be able to get a one-bedroom apartment or anything of that nature. So it's so many different issues that are part of this whole problem. And when you try to fix one aspect of it, you just, you know, created another problem.
I want to jump in on that. Yeah, I want to jump in on that too, because I spent 20 years in the food industry and looking at it, because as Sharifa stated earlier, I like to see things from the other side. Right. So from a strictly business standpoint, you know, working in the restaurants or in any other job, each position has an assigned value, whether it's good, yes, bad, or indifferent. There's an assigned value. So if I hire other trainers to work with me in my gym, there's a certain value for each position. And it's not up to the business to adjust their rates for somebody else's hardship. You know, so, and you know, I'm not saying that to be cold. Like I said, it's just from the business
standpoint. Straight.
So, yeah, so if you're working with a company that has 30,000 employees, and you're telling them that they have to pay each employee an additional $4. I mean, I don't think it's that company being greedy. Like that's millions upon millions of dollars that you're asking them to just take out of their bank account.
I think what you're describing is this, and this is the fine line that we walk down. There's a social issue, you know, because people are, let's just say, for lack of a description, below the poverty line or below the cost of living wage. And then there's a financial issue, mm-hmm, because forget about Kroger's. Let's just say you have a small family run bodega, and now you're telling them they have to pay their, you know, their workers $15 an hour. Last I saw, most bodega owners aren't driving around in Ferraris and Porsches and going on private jets. Mm-hmm. They're just getting by like the rest of us are, right? So to impose that on them could be a very big hardship.
Yeah.
As far as the Kroger's or the Walmart's or the big companies of the world, there's a few things that happen. Number one, I'm sure they're going to find loopholes to get around it where they can. Number two, when they can't, what are they going to do? They're just going to cut back. They're going to fire people, and they're going to downsize. And everyone left is going to be so worried about getting fired that they're going to work harder and the productivity goes up. So I think there's a fine line that you walk. And also, just to be fair, $15 in California certainly is not enough, just like it isn't in New York.
Yeah.
But if you go to a place like in the Midwest, like let's just say Idaho, that might be great living. So the application, it's easy to say on a tweet or on a 60-second info ad, $15 minimum wage across the country. But the practicality of it doesn't work because it's not level. Maybe California needs more and other places less. You have to look at by region. The second thing is, when the government starts telling you how much that you have to pay your employees, it's a slippery slope. Mm. From, again, just from a business perspective, I think what they're trying to do is get away from the fact that, like, not for anything, who wants to work as an essential, you know, worker in a grocery store making minimum wage for their entire life? It's usually a stepping stone because you want to move up the ladder.
That's where I was going to go next.
Yep. You know, so I think what it is that the government, as opposed to just saying, here's $15, stay where you are, leave us alone, they should be offering services or tools to help people to rise up from, you know, being a clerk at McDonald's making a minimum wage so they can move up the food chain. You know, that's the math part.
That's the thing, Ari.
Go ahead.
That's the thing. What programs can you say to someone in the food industry? Now, that may work in the computer industry. That may work in the finances industry and anything like that. But what are you going to tell some people? You're going to tell people, hey, you need to start growing food. So who's going to teach them how to do that? You're going to teach them how to grow food. So who's going to teach them how to do these things? Because we're talking about assigned capital, assigned worth. So now you got to go and you got to do this. So if we're going to talk about welfare to the public, which that's what you're talking about, the general welfare to the public when the government steps in and does all these things like that, yada, yada, yada. Okay, then let's look at across the board. Businessmen shouldn't get per diems or paybacks for their lunches and dinners, for their travel. Because if we're going to do welfare at a system, then business is not excluded. So let's take out the 13th Amendment and 14th Amendment where businesses are now a person and get the same treat as that person, okay? The kickback on Kroger's and the federal government is all the subsidies that they get for giving these people that $4 an hour. Now, they don't turn that down. They don't turn down the tax breaks. They don't turn down the tax cuts.
Don't give them subsidies, right? Don't give them subsidies.
Right, so if we're gonna do that, because it takes more than $15 an hour in any state in the United States. The cheapest state to live in is Idaho and Montana, and you still have to make $20.83 an hour to afford living, just living. So the problem is not the minimum wage. The problem is the inflation. The problem is the legal standpoints behind it that are lobbying for these countries and these companies to get all this stuff like that.
I agree, because the lack of accountability with those companies, that's what the problem is. I think it's really dangerous to say, oh, we need to like help these people learn how to work their way up. Like, no, they're already in an essential position to like our country being able to operate, like to just operate. So they're essential. It's not like they're in an unimportant or lowly position. So maybe it's up to the companies to treat that position as that value and treat it in that valuable way and up for them to compensate in that way.
Let me ask you a question.
I was going to say, like, I think in this, people are so focused on like, oh, fast food workers or grocery workers, but what about people who is working in hospitals, you know, who I feel like anything in a hospital, especially right now, and what we're going through is an essential worker, and they're not even making $15 an hour. They can't even afford to live. And if inflation and things is going to keep happening anyway, I feel like everybody deserves to be able to live. If you're working, because if you're not working, the first thing people will say is, oh, well, why don't you go out and get a job? I don't care where you get a job at, get a job somewhere, as long as you're working and taking care of yourself. But then if they're working and they cannot take care of their families, then that's not going to stop the increase of price of things, of the cost of living. Where I'm at now, when I first moved in this neighborhood, it was $900 a month. That was a few years ago. Now it's $1,375. And I'm in a smaller house than what I was. So, but I have not gotten, I have to work twice as hard to keep up with it. So I feel like it's lots of factors than just pinpointing and saying, yes, this is just it. It's factors across the board that needs to be addressed.
Absolutely.
I agree. And I'd like to bring up two points for conversation. One of which is, do you think that the restaurant workers, like servers, should be participating in the minimum wage? And the second thing is, if companies didn't have a minimum wage and they didn't have to pay people the current minimum wage, do you think they would be happy to pay them less?
Mark, you brought up a great point, which most people don't understand. Servers, So servers don't get paid the regular minimum wage that everybody owes. All right. So when I was going through Le Cordon Bleu in 2005, I was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, right? I worked at a private golf club, which is one of the best jobs that I've ever had. While minimum wage was like, I guess, $7 or something like that at that time, we were getting paid $2.83 an hour because we're tipped employees.
Right.
Now, a lot of people don't know about that. And I really think that's a great point. And Shelly, you're right, man. Like I said, we're cooks in a lot of different places. We do a lot of things in the medical industry and all these places, and we're not looked at as a professional. You know, McDonald's workers are professionals. If nobody bought things from McDonald's, they wouldn't be working there, period. They would go to somewhere else. But I think anybody that works in the food industry, they need to have a hard look to say, hey, these are essential workers, because where are most of the pharmacies at? They're in grocery stores, or they're to CVS or Walgreens or something like that. Or, you know, when I was in New York, it was called Duane Reade. So, you know, where are those places at? When you're in the restaurant, you're a server, you don't know what they have. You don't know what they're doing. Everybody has to eat. So I really think the food aspect needs to take a lot, because the temperature of the food in America shows what's going on in America in realism.
And I think it's more than just that industry, though. I think, to me, it's a reflection on our society as a whole, because when you talk about school teachers or anyone in the education industry, it's like, I can't believe that we have so many different professions that are making so much more than our educators. Richard, you were going to say something?
I think that's where we come in, you know, as a whole, from the self-sabotaging system that we have. Inflation wins, government wins, corporations win. There has to be a level field for employees to win too. You know, that there has to. It's kind of like everything's hitting them everywhere, where it's sabotaging everything for millions of people, you know? So it's not I don't think it's a food industry thing. I just think it's an issue of our system as a whole. Can they afford the $4 raise? Of course they can. Of course they can. People, they're making a lot of money. They wouldn't be able to afford you on minimum wage if they were making double on that anyways.
Who wouldn't?
The corporations.
So what you're saying
is they're making a spread.
Of course, every business, right? This is the challenge with raising the minimum wage. If you raise the minimum wage, and let's take a restaurant, for example, you know, and you guys could speak to this, you know, from experience. If you raise minimum wage and you don't raise the revenue to cover that cost, what as a business are you going to do with your staff or your workers?
I think, Ari, it goes to the point you made earlier about everything can't be like across the board, you know, application to everything. So how you treat Walmart, a huge corporation that definitely pays their workers too little, and how you treat a family-owned restaurant that's like it's apples and oranges.
You can't make a blanket statement. So and then what you do is, you know, it's, you know, you have your two extremes, right? You have Walmart on one extreme, and then you have your mom and pop shop on the other extreme. And then you have a lot of people in the middle. And that's where it becomes a slippery slope. So I think, you know, so what we're all agreeing to in a sense is you can't just make a blanket statement across the board. You can't make it across the whole country because different states, different cost of living, you know. And then what you have to do is you have to be careful of that balancing act to say, okay, if I raise it to 15, how many jobs am I going to lose? And also... In a lot of industries, this is where people kind of get their start. You know, this is where the younger folks kind of come in and they start in the restaurants and they start in the McDonald's and they start. This is getting them into the workforce and then they work their way up. You know,
not as much anymore.
That's times are tougher now.
No. Before COVID, people weren't going into the restaurants. These millennials are not going to work at McDonald's and different restaurants and things like that. They're creating apps. They're going to Google. They're going to Facebook. I mean, I've been in the restaurant industry since I was 14 years old, I trained under a master chef. The restaurant industry, I graduated in 2007 with already plus 10 years in the business before I even went to culinary school. Do you know how many people are coming out? They don't even know fractions. They don't know this stuff. So the talent pool is not this emergence of young that are trying to come into this industry. No, what the restaurant industry does, and if you're a financial person, right? And you're in New York, which I like that. But all right, so you remember when Bush flew, right? Oh yeah, Brooklyn all day, Bed-Stuy. So you got,
Brooklyn, that's where I'm at now.
Yes, all right. So you remember back in the Bush times when we were going through that kind of slight recession or depression or whatever they wanted to call it. What was the number one industry everybody was going into? The food industry.
Finance. Wow.
They were going into the food industry because it was an easy way to get a job. People that had backgrounds in anything, going to be dishwashers, servers, things like that. Okay, well, that talent pool is dried up. That was a long time ago. Nowadays, with all this, you know, you can create an app. Look at all the companies that they send you food and they do all those things like that from a box, from a distribution company. So the food industry is changing. It's not this conventional thing that it used to be. But what I'm seeing is that we have people in government, which I don't trust Jim Crow Joe, and nor did I trust Agent Orange, all right? I don't trust none of them and still don't. You're not gonna give me something that makes to the American public like you're doing something for them. Like most people don't
like even Robin know Hood.
So take Robin Hood, for example. You could compare them to the SNAP program. The SNAP program says, oh, well, we're gonna give food stamps and we're gonna make sure that you have food and you know about this. All right, do you know what the cost of meal that they give for family? $1.40. That's the average, $1.40 per meal. What are you gonna feed your children to some kids?
I agree with you. Let me pivot from what you're saying. I want you to, because you brought up a good point. People aren't going into the food industry because they're going and making apps and technology, right? You know, I tell my kids, don't go into finance, don't go into law, don't go into medicine, go into coding, and you'll have a career somewhere doing something.
Yes.
You know, when it comes to the food industry, let's talk about the grocery stores, right? Kroger's raising minimum wage. Has anyone ever got a chance to go into an Amazon grocery store pre-COVID? No cashiers, all robots. They don't have people in there. What do you think is going to happen to all these grocery stores when they don't need to have, you know, that whole row of cashiers? You know, we see it in like home self-checkout now. So the thing is that those jobs are going to go the way, kind of like the way retail stores are going because of Amazon. You know, so we're going to see that shift in that migration. So I'm going to, maybe I'll get yelled at for saying this, but I think anyone that is going to have a lifelong career working in a grocery store, you know, is going to be in for a rude awakening. If we want to talk about essential services, look, if you want to be a nurse or something in a hospital, you know, medical assistant, yes, essential, you know. Dinosaurs were essential too at one point in time as part of the food chain. But I think grocery workers will eventually be replaced by robots, much like in the auto industry, had to reinvent themselves because the factory lines are all machines now.
Well,
so
I'll give you a personal example, and I agree with you to a certain extent, Ari, but I will give you a personal example of one thing that happened here at an Albertsons. This was maybe about 5 or 6 years ago. I came in and I noticed that it was almost all self-checkout, and then there were a couple little lines, and that went on for maybe a year or so. I come back in, I go there often, but I came back in one day and they had replaced some of the self-checkout lines with more of the lines with the cashiers, because a lot of the customers really pushed back and said, hey, I don't want to do self-checkout, I want a cashier to help me with this process. And I'm one of those people. And it's not just because I'm trying to save those employee jobs. I don't like self-checkout. I won't even, you know, I don't go to Food for Less because they don't bag my groceries. People who know me know, like, I am spoiled. I need you to bring this up. I need you to put it in the bag. And I think there are a lot of people who feel that way.
Absolutely.
You remember what life was like before. Mm-hmm. Now, imagine, I'll put it like this. My youngest daughter just turned 7, mm-hmm. and she graduated kindergarten last year, you know, heavy COVID, right? She had a Zoom graduation, and they did a little drive-by the school to get to hand. You weren't allowed to get out of your car. You rolled down your window with your mask, and they handed you the diploma, and you kept driving. Now, I say this story because for her, this is the norm and the reality. For us, we're like, what? Zoom graduation? Drive-by? You know, this isn't like a movie. But for her generation, this is going to be the norm of wearing masks and all that. But for us, I agree with you. I'm not a, when I go to BJ's or Target and I look at the shopping cart and I look at the self-checkout, I say, hell no. But for like my kids, they're going to be like, this is what it is. Or what Amazon has in their store, you don't even take it out of your cart. You just roll right through and you walk out the store and it scans and it does everything like that. So maybe we're the dinosaurs, but that change is on the horizon.
Maybe Mark, I think you were going to say something.
At this moment, no. But what I was going to say is, what about Amazon? What about the companies who don't pay any federal income taxes, where we could use that revenue to help raise the minimum wage?
You brought up the 13th and 14th Amendment, which a lot of people overlook. So slavery wasn't ended by all the things that we did. And the reason why I bring up slavery is because it's dealing with labor. Labor is something that always has value. And depending on what trade you have and how you looked at in the public is how your value is going to be set. Now, I look at a lot of people talk about NBA athletes and how much they don't understand. They got to get taxed in every place that they play. The owners don't. You know, a lot of that revenue, we don't teach trades or anything anymore. And
what do you mean by that?
I don't think that's right.
They pay taxes only in the state that they live, and they pay federal. They don't pay in every state that they.
Hold on. Most of them do have to pay. So what about Latrell Sprewell when he played for the Minnesota Timberwolves, and he's still one of the. I think it's the state of Wisconsin when they go play the Milwaukee Bucks or something like that. See, you guys don't just understand the tax breaks down that these cats have to pay. Athletes have to pay a lot of taxes because you're accruing money in a place. It's not just you get a paycheck from the NBA. You get a paycheck every time you play a game. So if I'm playing a game in Los Angeles, I pay the taxes in Los Angeles. A lot of times athletes, you just think they're paying federal and they're just paying this. No. They're not paying.
They pay federal, state, and local. Well, so what it is that I'll give you an example. I'll give you a good example. New York, New Jersey. You have a lot of people that live in New Jersey, but they work in New York City, in Manhattan. What happens is that they'll pay New York City taxes because they actually work in Manhattan, but they get a credit for that against what they pay in their state of New Jersey. So you're not paying in both states. You're paying in one.
You're talking about a regular corporation. People have to understand that.
No. I'm talking about employees.
That's what I'm saying. But it's different for nonprofits. People forget that the NBA, the NFL, and the Major League Baseball are nonprofits. People forget that.
And he's right.
You know what I'm saying? Okay. So what I'm saying is that we always talk about athletes. This is my original point. We always talk about athletes and how much money they make and things like that. We never talk about these corporations like Walmart. We never talk about Amazon. We never talk about these places that don't pay their federal tax. Now, why is federal tax so important? Because a lot of food distribution, a lot of distribution of money is done on those taxes. So if we keep cutting Amazon and all these places, all this stuff that they've been doing for the longest time. I'm not saying that they just started. They learned from the Reynolds. They learned from the Carnegies. They learned from the Rockefellers because they were doing the same exact thing. We need to bring things back to America, doing our actual stuff. See, when we were growing up, some of our parents and even our grandparents still knew how to farm. See, they had the beans and tomatoes and things like that. They had that. We had community at that time. So I understand, Ari, what you're talking about, the times have changed, because we don't have community like that. I mean, the last time I visited New York and I got off over there by the Dwayne Reed and the courthouse, remember all the vendors? I used to smell the hot dogs, smell the pretzels, smell everything. It's not there anymore. So it is a cataclysm that's going on in America. And food is a justification of that, because food shows
roasted nuts.
We don't eat around the table anymore. We don't procure with other people. We don't check on Mrs. Jones down the street, Mrs. Vinaletti. We don't check on those people anymore.
Who is Mrs. Vinaletti?
Well, I'm just giving up some names,
man.
Saying,
that must have
and
been
that's
a
the
real
first
lady.
One you thought of?
That must have been real now, because right. That name came from nowhere.
Miss V, you know, in New York, a lot of people don't leave their boroughs. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's a lot of people in Brooklyn that's never been to Manhattan or Queens. You know what I'm saying? They're right there. But we just, I mean, that's just something I remember as a kid. We played stickball. We knew our neighbors. You know, I mean, you could go up. I mean, everybody know our buildings are tall, but I mean, you knew the people in the buildings. You had cookouts. You had all that stuff. You know, you didn't think about anybody going hungry back then. But now it's going more individual. But we have the voice. We have the platform. We can.
That's what we're doing right now. We're creating a platform to talk to the people and help the people. Robert, you made a comment?
No.
You keep saying no, Robert, but I keep hearing you talking. At least in my head, I keep hearing the voice of Robert.
I just want to say, I want to say two things to what Salim said. You won't get any love for NBA players with their salaries. You know, they should pay their fair share of taxes. I don't cry for them if they have to pay stat taxes in different states. You know, God bless them. I wish I had that talent and that gene pool to make $30, $40 million a year and give, you know, half my paycheck to the government or more than half, with still tens of millions of dollars left over. But, you know, what you're describing, there's two parts. One, you're talking about community and people knowing each other. And that's on us, you know, to do that. The government can't do that for us. The government, unless they want to pay us to check on our neighbors, isn't going to do that. You know, I'm gonna take the capitalist side for a second and just say, if the government is successful in forcing companies to pay a raised minimum wage, the repercussion of that, and I'm not saying it's good or bad, is going to be people are going to lose their jobs.
And it's gonna kill small businesses.
It's gonna hurt. You know, you can argue and say, look, Kroger's should be paying more and Amazon should be paying more. And I won't argue with that with you. I agree with you. But I think the collateral damage on that is going to be impactful, and it's not being taken into consideration in the application of it. And to me, that's a danger. And once you cross that Rubicon of saying the government says $15 minimum wage, what happens if they say $20? You and I on the receiving end might be happy, but if you were the business owner and you're trying to grow, you're not going to be happy. And where do they draw the line? It starts with grocery workers. It moves on into other areas. And then all of a sudden, and I know this is in a complete extreme, Russia was an example of government telling you how much to pay each person, and you take away people's incentives to want to work hard because they're not happy making their salary, that they want to grow and do more. And I get it, a certain percentage can't, and there should be other services for them. I don't think that minimum wage is necessarily the most effective tool to achieve that goal.
Interesting points. I think we've had some very interesting points today, and there's so much more I can go into with the questions that I have for just what Ari had to say and Salim had to say in these last few minutes. But we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show, so we'll have to wait until next week. I invite all of you to return to Face to Face Talk Show, where change starts with the conversation. And I also want to invite anyone who is watching the show live, or if you're watching in the archives, if you want to join the conversation, please do visit my website at asharifa.com and select Be a Guest to sign up for Face to Face Talk Show. Until next week, Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, everyone have a safe and a blessed week. Bye now.